Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Have you ever wondered what life was like for the generation of pioneer settlers who came to Wisconsin, maybe in the early to mid-19th century? We're going to be hearing about the life of those folks through their letters, diaries, and other writings of the pioneers themselves. And our guide for all this is Michael Stevens. He's a Wisconsin State Historian Emeritus, the author of 13 books. His new one is called The Making of Pioneer Wisconsin, Voices of Early Settlers, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And it's a dandy book. And I know you're going to enjoy listening to him talk about it. And maybe you have some questions about it. Do you have documents from early Wisconsin settlers? What do you want to know about pioneer life? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you got a little story to tell us. You can also send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Michael Stevens, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
Well, what got you so interested? I mean, you've been a historian pretty much your whole life. How'd that happen?
Well, how I became a historian was by asking questions. I really remember the Wisconsin State Fair in 1961 or 62 and walking through, and I saw a table where the old Milwaukee socialists were there. I was collecting literature. But you had to go through the exhibits before you went on the rides or had the cream puffs, and their paper was pasted there. And I was wondering, why are these old guys who are not going to win the election doing that? And that led me to constantly throughout my life ask questions, why? So pioneers, why?
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
move?
And what is the, in your mind, what is the knowledge of this give to our present?
You know, a lot of people think of our ancestors or those from 150, 200 years ago as very dour and serious. You know, you see those old photographs where they had to sit still for a minute, and we tend not to think of them as facing the same problems that we have. When you think about it, the pioneers did the same things on an emotional level that we all do today. Decide where you're going to live, or am I going to move? How do I adjust to that new place? And how do I build a new community?
It was just fascinating to me, and that really brings home to me through your book what these people were like through their letters. A lot of them are pretty darn good writers, and their diaries that they kept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's that what surprised me in this project was the degree of emotion that was laid right out there. And some of the things they talked about were very similar to the kinds of things that we talk about that we're interested. Food,
yeah.
Weather.
Weather, for sure.
Weather. And
ailment, what ails you? Ailments.
Right. There was a fellow in Mequon who could very well have been someone that you talked to today. He was talking about, someone asked him what the Wisconsin weather was like, and he said the summer heat, oppressive, winter cold, pretty severe. Weather's changeable, but the fall is glorious and beautiful. Isn't that the Wisconsin we have today? Exactly. You could be someone you had lunch with talked about that.
Oh, man. Michael Stevens, our guest. His book is called The Making of Pioneer Wisconsin, Voices of Early Settlers. And there's a lot of writings in his book. Actually, why don't you talk about how you organized the book and why you chose this time period? I thought it was a perfect choice of time.
Well, we talk about migration and immigration and moving as if it's something new, but this is something that's been going on over a millennium. And I thought, gee, Wisconsin, a place that had maybe 30,000 people living it in the 1830s, suddenly had a 500,000 people come in over a 20-year period. Half of them were born in the U.S., half were born abroad.
Myriad other countries.
Right. 25% of them, a quarter of them, couldn't speak a word of English coming here. And so it seems has something similar today.
And I like how you've organized the book because you, well, talk about how you've organized. I love the setups, I just call them setups, that you write you bring in along various patches of letters that and diaries that you have.
Right. I wanted the reader to get a sense, the same joy I get as a historian, hearing the actual voices. And so I interweaved my commentary and organized the book with a prologue giving us the Native American perspective. The decision, the first chapter is about the decision to move and how do I make that decision? How do I learn about it? The second is, how do I adjust to this place with strange weather and different people? And finally, how do I get along with my neighbors and build a new community, a new place?
And for some of sometimes I laughed right out loud at some of the, I mean, there's some humor in there. Some of it maybe not necessarily intended, but I can remember the writings of one of the people from one of the ships who was talking about coming over, and there was a German boy, a German man, and a German woman who weren't married, and they suspected that they might have been sleeping together, so they set something up, caught him in the act, and sent the guy to the coal bin.
That's right, and you know, and it's little slices of life on board, and I'm grateful that these pioneers wrote them out. You know, much like today, back in the days when we used to get airplane food, we'd complain about airplane food. They all complained about ship food. It didn't matter
Everyone.
Whether you were Norwegian or German or Swiss. The food was, and one fellow said, if you want to be healthy, bring your own food along.
But when they got here, then the worm turned a little bit because they were eating meat a lot more.
Yes. One of my favorite people is this young man, moved to Jefferson from Bavaria, George Frometer, and you could hear it in his voice. In America, you eat meat every day. Sometimes you get to eat it twice. We get coffee twice a day. And it's just, you know, this excitement there that you have.
Absolutely. Well, we've got both David and Todd waiting to get. Let's go to David first from O'Connell Falls. Then we'll get to Todd. David, you're first. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My family goes back to the 1850s in Wisconsin, and we can trace them back that far, and they came from, like, Germany or wherever. But I think what needs to be emphasized, especially the young people today, is just how people depended on each other back then, and there were no guarantees. And they had to pay for their farm when they came. They had to get loans to plant seed, and there were, you know, they had to depend on the crop and how much they had to depend on their on people in the community, you know, to survive. And it seems like today the impression is being given to our young people is that, well, you came over here, you bought a house, and everything was great. It really was a tough kind of life, but you learn to enjoy it. I mean, you know, they never had a vacation. They never had a day off, I mean, other than Sunday. But everything that my ancestors talk, my grandparents talk about, is no one had any guarantees. You had to just roll with whatever happened.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and then, but I see some young people today when they talk, you know, like, oh, well, you know, everything just sort of fell in place. Not for everyone.
Not for everyone, indeed, David. Michael, I'm sure you want to comment on.
Yeah, you know, he makes an interesting point about how people had to work together in early Wisconsin. And in the 1830s, there was a fellow in Racine came up with something called the Wisconsin character. And I think much of that resonates today. And he said, what is in the Wisconsin character? He said, hard work. People work hard in Wisconsin. Self-reliance.
Yeah.
And a public spirit. And he described that as a more friendly, neighborly feeling in Wisconsin. And you feel that in many places there. And so there was this mixture of this independence we think of the pioneer, but also reliance on the community, where he talks about the community. When you come to a new place, there was no school. People had to get together to build the school. There was no church. People had to get together to build the church and building that new community. So,
and when you got here, at that time, you didn't have anything. I mean, there was no house. You had to start from the ground up.
Right. One of the a guy named Christian Ficker, who I mentioned, wrote a book that was published in Germany on what to do when you come to Wisconsin.
Yes.
And, you know, he listed different occupations, and he said, if you have these occupations, you're going to find work. And if you have these, not so much. And one of my favorite things, he says, if you're a doctor, a physician, come here. We need you. But if you're a lawyer, unless you know how to use a five-pound axe, you're probably better to stay back in Germany.
I love that, too. David, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, now let's get to Todd in Janesville. Hi, Todd.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple quick history deals that I've noticed when we travel up to Madden Island. It was one of the first settlements for when they traveled to the lakes. They did a lot of trading with the native people up there with all the fur trading. There's a great museum if anybody's up there with their kids. There's a great little museum in La Pointe, Wisconsin, which is part of the Fossil Islands. And then on how they you know dealt with doing fur trading for food and all that. And it's a great little museum to take your family to. And also the Chief Blackhawk. Lived for a while in my hometown of Janesville, Wisconsin.
That museum in La Pointe, one of the Wisconsin Historical Society sites, a great place. And it reminds me of, we have a woman in the writing from La Pointe in the book, Florantha Sproat. And one of the things that often tends not to get covered in a lot of histories is experience of women. And I have incorporated a number of them, but Florantha Sproat writes this very touching letter. She's up there. She's pregnant. Her husband's a minister. And she loses her baby in childbirth. And she writes back to her mother. She says, "We don't have any physicians here. Only there had been a physician around." Well, the medicine was pretty primitive then, but even then there was this sense that we tend to forget that the things that even people in the 19th century took for granted just weren't there, available. Yeah. And she very touchingly talks about my heart hungers for my babe.
And that was a stirring letter. I really enjoyed the writings of a lot of them. We'll talk about some more of them as we go along here. I'm wondering about maybe you should address editing or the lack thereof, how you handled the letters, because there would be times I would think in some of the writing it would be pretty much impossible to present it exactly as it was written.
Right. Well, in most cases, and the readers will find, I didn't correct their spelling errors and their punctuation and their grammar. Some cases, though, the level of literacy was such that you had to, at least in brackets or fix spellings, but... you get the authentic thing. And that was part of the decision is, do you clean it up? And generally, no.
No, you didn't.
It tends to be the raw, and people had different levels of education.
Talking with Michael Stevens today, and his book is titled The Making of Pioneer Wisconsin, Voices of Early Settlers. Fascinating book. You can join in with your own questions or maybe experiences to share. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at pioneer life in Wisconsin, basically from around 1830 to 1850, those were the years chronicled by our guest today, Michael Stevens, Wisconsin State Historian Emeritus and the author of 13 books and nearly 30 articles. And his book now is The Making of Pioneer Wisconsin, Voices of Early Settlers. So you'll get to read in their own words what it was like to come to Wisconsin and to live in Wisconsin in between 1830 and 1850. It's fascinating. And we were talking about writing, and I really did come to admire and like a lot the writing of many of these people. My favorite probably was Sarah Foote, who was just a young lass young gal, and she had her diary, and you have several entries from her diary, but one of the messages or things that she wrote really struck me, I think it gives an example of what kind of writer she was. They were coming, and they came upon a cemetery, and in the cemetery, there were a few of the grave sites that were completely covered with flowers, and she commented on that. She said some graves, she talked about them being placed there by affection, the flowers being placed there by affection's hand.
Yes.
What a wonderful term to use.
Yeah, and it's remarkable. One of the things I tried to do in the book is find the points of view of people who normally don't show up in textbooks. And children, it's really hard to get the sense of what the experience of children. She's 16 years old. She's sad about leaving her school in Ohio. They're going to go by wagon all the way to Wisconsin. It's kind of an adventure, but it's also a little scary. The wagon breaks down sometime. Papa goes away to find that. And
just to find their way sometimes.
Just to find their way. And she ends her diary and doesn't make any additions to it when she arrives in Wisconsin, says, "And now we are here, ready for our life in the woods."
Yeah.
Reminds you a little of Laurel Ingalls Wilder, who would have been about that same age as a child. And it's rare to find that.
And she got married a year later.
And she got married a year later, yes.
About 17 years old.
Yes.
Wow. Gene in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Gene. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, interesting. My mother-in-law died within the last decade, and in her material, we found a book that had been published in 1925 celebrating what they claimed to be the first arrival of a shipload of Norwegians to the U.S. in 1825, and they were all exiled from Norway because they weren't Lutheran. They were all Quakers. And this book that we found went on to say that the first Norwegians from that vessel that settled in Wisconsin settled in Jefferson Township, which is down near the Illinois border.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole business about why people came, talk a bit about that.
Yeah, there were so many reasons why people moved, much like people do today, moving from one state to another for a new job or because they, for any number of reasons. And so definitely religious freedom was one piece of that. The lack of economic opportunity was a real driver. Revolution in Germany in 1848, the 48ers came over to Wisconsin. So that was a key piece. And, you know, the two things that ended up getting built first were the school and the church, and very important piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Gene. I appreciate your call. Very much. So the settlers, as you say, the Norwegians and Germans, probably the two most?
The Norwegians and Germans are probably the largest number, but substantial. Swiss,
yes.
And New Glarus, Dutch, we've seen Irish and English. We forget there's a, when we talk about immigrants, English-speaking migrants coming from Cornwall and Yorkshire and all over. And the other people that are coming over, and I think we need to remember that, actually are coming from the eastern states. You know, we really shouldn't make a distinction between immigrants and pioneers. They're all moving. And so you have people from Vermont, the land's worn out. Upper New York, there's not economic opportunity. And so those things. And you have a few African Americans coming to Wisconsin because it's more perhaps hospitable in the 1840s than maybe in southern Ohio.
Yeah. Jackie in Sun Prairie, let's go to you next. Hi, Jackie.
Thank you so much for having this on. It's one of my favorite things to read, to hear. It's also one of my favorite things to read, so I'm probably going to be purchasing the book. But I was wondering if in the book he mentions Juliet Kinsey, who was the wife of the Portage Indian agent back in 1832, and her book called,
Waban.
I can't remember it.
Waban?
Waban.
Waban, yes.
Yes. Yes, and actually there's an excerpt in there. She tells a wonderful story about the court system in early Wisconsin with French traders, and so you need Juliet Kinsey in that. Any book about early Wisconsin has to be there. So
yeah,
but it's a really important source, runs hundreds of pages, and so we picked a good story from her.
Jackie, does that? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. A few years ago, we were seeking out our ancestors and coming into Wisconsin. And down near Albany, Wisconsin, we found a bunch of those people. And on top of that, it turns out, and this goes to why people came here to settle, there were two or three of my great-great-great-great uncles who were kind of soldiers of fortune. They were young men who went out to the gold fields of California and then came back and went into, were soldiers in the war, and they seemed to be the adventurous ones. So I have a few other comments, but I'll put them on Facebook.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Jackie. Great comments.
Yeah, you know, and we forget there's a gender imbalance. A lot of young men came out here. There were like two men for every woman, and one fellow from Iowa County is writing back and saying that there aren't a lot of girls around here, and what do young men think about? Yeah. And he says there's some rich widows, but I'm a poor man, and hopefully more women will start immigrating. And
I think there was at least one letter that you read where you have the person writing and saying, please bring more women over with
right.
you.
Bring it's Yorkshire, and he uses, you know, the lassie is the term, right? Bring a flock of lassies over.
But then once they got here, and we'll get to Ralph and Lac du Flamme in just a second, but once they got here, for those women, I think in maybe even more than the men, there was a lot of homesickness.
There was. And again, one of the things I was pleased to find, that strong emotional language from women.
Yes.
You have some women describing, one woman writes, "You can't imagine how lonely I feel. I'm in such low spirits. I had the blues most horribly." She doesn't speak English, and her neighbors speak English, and her husband's out working, so that's a challenge. There were other women who had different experiences.
Yeah,
and
it for sure. Ralph and Lac du Flamme, let's go to you now. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. I hope you're familiar with a book published by the Milwaukee County Historical Society, and it's called The German American Pioneers in Wisconsin and Michigan, and it's also known as the Frank Curler Letters, 1849 to 1864.
Yes, yes. And we actually have a couple of Curler letters in the book. One of my favorite people was a young woman who has a whirlwind courtship of 3 weeks. She's a curler, and she marries a Milwaukee merchant, and she almost seems like the giddy bride that we see today. She's writing to her in-laws who are back in Germany. She's describing her dress. She's describing what they served. And she is so enthused about her new life as a wife, talking about how oh, I get up early and I make breakfast for my husband, and he gets up a half hour later, and then he comes up from the store, and at 10 o'clock I start making dinner, and then he goes to the store, and at 3 o'clock. And what's interesting is you read her 4 years later, she's not so excited about all that cooking and working and washing that she's doing. The curlers are great.
Thank you very much, Ralph, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And speaking of email, Terry in Roberts emailed to say she's always thought that the Homestead Act was a program that gave immigrants free land. She's not sure if that was the case. Can you say if the Homestead Act was part of Wisconsin immigration?
No, Homestead Act happens much later. It's happens during the Civil War and after the Civil War. So the land here in Wisconsin wouldn't have been covered by that. And free only in the sense that you are, again, we're talking about west of the Mississippi, free in the sense that you had to work off your purchase by farming the land, but doesn't affect Wisconsin.
So a good question. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, there was a lot of comedy going on at that time, Michael Stevens, and I know you. There are some that you really enjoy,
right? You know, we again tend to think of them as so serious. One of my favorites. Once Wisconsin becomes a state, you have groups that are competing, and you have what we would call them prohibitionists. They call them temperance, who wanted to ban liquor manufacture and sale in Wisconsin. And you had others. You had the Housewives of Germany petitioning, or German Housewives of Milwaukee petitioning the right for their husbands to have a beer when they came home from work. But there were fellows at Muskego Lake who I think could have been on the Colbert Report or writing The Onion. And usually these documents are very serious and legal. And they create this fictional group called the Muskego Lake Fishing Club. And they say they are worried if we ban the sale of beer, it's going to multiply the drinking classes to such an awful extent that Lake Muskego will be drunk dry. And if we do that, the problem is, one, we're not going to be able to go fishing, which we are guaranteed by Magna Carta and the Declaration of Independence. Two, even if it's going to kill the fish, and that's unbiblical because man is supposed to care for creation in the Bible, so banning liquor is bad there. Third, even if the fish did survive, everybody knows that fish, and I love how they put it, in a baked or fried state of existence, are best in brewed or distilled fluids. Finally, if the lake's dry, the rivers are going to go dry. If the rivers are going to go dry, then manufacturing stop. It's going to hurt the economy. If that happens, then they're not going to be able to appoint commissioners to clean up the rivers. If that happens, the legislature's not going to be able to give jobs to their friends. If that happens, they're going to have to raise taxes. So instead, would you pass a law, please, prohibiting the adulteration of good liquor?
And, you know, as I read that, I thought, you know, I belong to a group of guys that fish together and a kind of a fishing club. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of talk that comes up with in those fishing trips.
Right. And you know, that's one of the things that I hope people take away from this is history is not just about different people who lived in different times and that they have nothing to tell us, but on this kind of emotional experience that people go through, it's very similar to how people that we know today. You know,
we haven't changed much.
No, we haven't. You know, speaking of humor, a fellow named John Diedrichs, who I think lived in Manitowoc, writing home, and he's talking about, he says, well, dear ones, I'm a farmer. I have 80 acres, and I have livestock consisting of a dog and a cat, you know. and then he's telling what they have for dinner. And you know, you work, you eat your main meal in the middle of the day, and you come in, and he says, this is a quote from him, "Towards noon we return to the house, and Mother has white beans with bacon, or bean soup with bacon, or rice soup with bacon, or barley soup with bacon, or flour dumplings with bacon, which is our Sunday meal." So a sense of humor there.
I love that sense of humor. And along with, there was one other, well, this is away from humor for a minute, because it was cold, and the shelters and the cabins and so forth that were built there, you know, temporarily sometimes, and then sometimes they were fixed up over time. But I remember at one point, and I was, I have my notes here in front of me, getting up in the morning, and it was, there was snow on the bed covers, and one person said we had to pull our shoes off the floor because they had frozen
right
to the floor.
Right, right. These weren't, you know, if emotions are the same, but the conditions are remarkably different. I think the other thing that's striking is a different landscape. There's a story about Norwegian immigrants during a huge storm with lightning, and they got down into the cellar and they said never seen the storms of that extent. And
these letters really set the stage and really tell this story of what it was like. Franny emailed to say that she was wondering if the writing of the letters and diaries were all in English, and how can she, well, then she wants to know, how do I get the book? Will it be on audio, she wonders, or maybe chapter a day? Well, we have no idea if it's going to be on chapter a day. But how does Franny or anybody else get a copy of the book?
You can get them at your local bookstores or any of the online Amazon or the Wisconsin Historical Society Museum. So it's widely available there. And the letters are, fortunately, now all in English, but there are English translations of these Norwegian and German and Flemish letters.
Yes. So there you go. Wisconsin Historical Society Press, of course, the press for Michael's book. Ron in La Crosse has something for us. Hi, Ron.
Yes. Last night on public TV, they had an 90-minute documentary about the Great Depression and how a lot of the families who couldn't farm in Lower 48 or just got dispossessed had a government New Deal program where they were moved to Alaska in 1935, and you know, they really weren't, government hadn't really prepared any accommodations or homes, but they had to live in canvas tents, and it was a hard life, hard road to hoe until, you know, the Second World War came along.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting connection there, is that same experience goes on and on where, you know, people make the decision to move, adapt, build a new life.
Yeah, or they're forced to move.
Or they're forced to move, yes.
As Ron was kind of pointing out, do you have a favorite pioneer in the book?
You know, my favorite is a woman named Racheline Bass, who lived in Platteville. She came to Wisconsin largely alone from Vermont. She's about 28 years old, single school teacher. She eventually meets a man in Platteville and marries him. But she was a school teacher. And she's writing the day after the last day of the semester. And she keeps her emotions right on the surface. Says, "You cannot imagine my joy, almost unbounded, which I experienced the next day. I felt as if my shackles were off. I'm free as a bird. I'm not required to be in school the next day, the next week, or the next month." And then she goes on and says, "But I do love school keeping, and when I see my students, I wish I were with them." And so that's a very familiar feeling, you know. She loves her teaching, but boy, the end of the semester was great for this particular woman who wanted to see the next semester over.
She was glad to have it over. Well, I think about that myself. Yeah. Sometimes I'm glad to have a semester over, but then it's not long before, oh, darn it, I like being in the classroom. And so I like to think I'm like her in that way, at least. Well, you know, the time period there was one of change. And you talk in the book, near the end of the book, it's sort of a reflection on how things have changed so much in a pretty short period of time. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the people who were involved realized they were living in a historic period.
Yeah.
They're reflecting on the change of the landscape, the change of the population. And one really interesting comment that was someone said, the great thing about Wisconsin is you actually get to meet people from all over the United States and from foreign countries, and you learn new things. They've had different backgrounds, and as a result, in his sense, he was saying, I feel myself changing as a result of that, learning that, and that kind of diversity that was encountered in there. While it ran into conflict sometime, some saw this as a really important time.
And they were not necessarily, I mean, they did not, slavery was not well liked.
There was a strong abolitionist movement in Wisconsin. We include, but it wasn't just the white folks who fought that, led that effort. We have a document written by 16 black men from Racine who are talking about discrimination in voting. You have others organizing against slavery. And some of those black men from Wisconsin went on to fight in the black regiments in the Civil War.
Man, it's just such a fascinating book. And the change that took place in just 20, you know, you go from 30,000 to a half a million.
Right, right.
People are just absolutely amazing. Well, you have some readings and some presentations coming up. Tell us where you're back tonight.
Tonight I'll be at Mystery to Me on Monroe Street in Madison. On April 18th, I'll be talking at the Union Grove Public Library in southeastern Wisconsin. That's 1 o'clock then. And the Kress Family Library in De Pere on May 1st at 6 o'clock. So.
And you're probably willing to do some more.
And I'm willing to do some more, and we have other talks scheduled other places and into June and July and August.
It's just wonderful. I really enjoyed your book, Michael. Thank you so much for putting it together and writing your writings in the book to guide us from one set of letters and diaries to the next was really, really helpful, but also added so much to the book. Of fine letters from people. And again, Sarah Foote, I wish I'd met you. She was a delightful person. You'll probably find as you read his book, you're probably going to find your own delightful person to admire, or maybe many of them. Michael Stevens is the author, and the book is titled The Making of Pioneer Wisconsin, Voices of Early Settlers, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. You know what we're going to do? We're going to go back a couple of hundred years next here on the Ideas Network, and you're going to be surprised at what you're going to hear about one of the explorers, Jean Nicolet. Our next guest today is Patrick Young, and he's got a new book out. It's called The Misunderstood Mission of Jean Nicolet. That next here on the Ideas Network.